Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. We're going to go in order of these three technical bills today. I'll start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 79. Kyle, can you give us an overview?
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 79 is a bill that comes to you from the governor on behalf of the Department of Revenue. And it's a bill relating to the Other Agency Accounts Division of the Department of Revenue. So as the name suggests, the Other Agency Accounts, it deals with the collection of delinquent debt of other agency accounts. That can be other state agencies, boards, or commissions, circuit courts, universities, and such are also included in there. And what the bill's doing is it's modifying the authority of the Department of Revenue to render that assistance in collecting that other debt of those other agencies. There's really kind of two changes or two categories of changes, I suppose, in the bill. The first is more or less clarifying the existing authority of Department of Revenue to collect debt related to public universities and the Oregon Health and Science University. So there's been some statutory changes related to the universities and OHSU over the past few sessions. So there's language changes in Senate Bill 79, kind of truing up that authority to make that consistent. But that's consistent with past experience of Department of Revenue collecting this debt. And the second change is the expanding of the authority of DOR to collect debt that's originating from local and special government bodies. So in the SMS, there's an example included there of like a port district might be an example of one of those local government or special government bodies.
Questions of Kyle? Okay, we have some people signed up here. Deanna Mack of the Department of Revenue.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And Kyle did a great job of explaining what Senate Bill 79 is trying to do. This is something that we sort of came across as a result of Senate Bill 1067 out of the 2017 session, which was a government efficiency effort to streamline collections in the state. And we discovered that these ties to these agencies maybe are not quite as strong as they once were. And we wanted to clarify, make sure that we still have authority to do that. We also wanted to make sure that we had authority to collect for the community colleges, which are local districts, which we have been doing for decades. The other agency accounts unit has been around since 1971. So we certainly don't intend to require anyone to use us, but we did in the bill, it does clarify our existing authority and expand some to make sure that we do have authority for some of these other ones. We have heard, though, that there are some concerns with the bill as it's drafted because it does expand some authority, which we certainly aren't trying to take away business from anyone else. We have worked with our client agencies. They're all supportive of this bill. But we've also learned recently that there are people that want us to expand our services to provide at least refund offset only services to these other entities. So we are willing certainly to engage with anyone who wants to request an amendment in the bill. At this point, though, and of course at the whim of the chair, but at this point we'd like you to support the introduced version of the bill to ensure that we do have the authority that we need to be able to continue these collections with the for these services that we've been providing for years now. So with that, if you have any questions.
Thank you. Johnson, League of Oregon Cities.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. The League supports Senate Bill 79. It did look like a cleanup bill, but when you look at it a little more carefully, the very last paragraph of the bill says that a qualifying entity means a public body. as defined in statute. And when you look at that statute, that includes cities and counties and ports and other folks. What this bill would really do to help cities is that it helps streamline debt collection. Doesn't make a lot of sense for the state to have a refund check going back out to a debtor, and then another local government has to turn around and go get that money again. So we would like that efficiency of being able to turn over those debts to the state and have that refund, that part of it that's owed to the local government come off the top so we don't have to do it again. It wouldn't change the fact that we do use debt collectors, private debt collectors, to
tackle is the right word.
And the debts I'm talking about are primarily traffic, utility, SDCs, because sometimes those SDCs are installments, and property taxes that indirectly affect all of our taxing districts. So we would like to be able to have this option. It's permissive. The first paragraph of the bill says the Department of Revenue may assist, and it also says the qualified entity. So it's permissive on both sides. I'm sure there would be a charge that we would have to come to terms with, but this is really about efficiency. Instead of adding new taxes and fees, this would help make it cost efficient for everyone. So we support the bill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions? Thank you. Matt Markey.
Question.
I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
Waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in your opinion, does the bill expand the authority of the department?
Mr. Chair, Senator Vence, yes. I mean, it doesn't, right now it says state officer, board, commission, et cetera, and this adds public bodies to the permissive authority. So, there still would have to be a lot to happen before a local government could choose this option, but yes.
Follow up. I'm just curious. We've had this discussion many times about the collection efforts of anybody to try to help us collect these monies. And I've forgotten over the years whether we should be defaulting to our Department of Revenue and its good efforts or to the private sector. And so in sitting around thinking about it, I thought, well, why don't I just ask and see if you have seen a difference in performance or what?
Chair Haas, Senator Vence, I remember a bill in 2015. I don't remember when since. And I'll play newbie in 2015. The bill had already passed before I realized the locals were taken out. but on the tax side, the trend is to now have the Department of Revenue collect our taxes when we choose to do that. So marijuana taxes, lodging taxes, we now have that authority for DOR to collect for us, and it's more efficient, and we've shown the numbers that it's cheaper. So it seems odd that we can't have the delinquency done by the Department of Revenue as well. So the initial tax we can have them collect. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I think efficiency-wise, what I've seen in the other data was that, yes, it can be cheaper, especially on the offset. If we're talking about other debt collection methods, that's one another thing, perhaps, and I don't have the data on it. But on the offset, it's obviously more efficient to have that done off the top.
Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Markey, Oregon Collectors Association.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Markey representing the Oregon Collectors Association today, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. We are testifying in opposition as the way the bill is drafted today. This certainly, as Senator Vence just stated, broadens what the Department of Revenue or who the Department of Revenue can collect for. And I think there are different questions involved with some of the discussion that you just heard, is that, you know, there's a question of who should collect state debt. Should that be state government employees? Should that be the private sector? And I think today we have a pretty good solution to that, where we have both people doing collections. And certainly there are private collection agencies involved, and there is state employees and the Department of Revenue that are involved. And I think they work pretty well together. Right now, the Department of Revenue does not do a lot of local government collections, and this would broaden that so that a whole variety of different types of local government would be able to use the Department of Revenue. Now, today is the first time that I have heard that their goal is for the tax offset program and not for Department of Revenue to do a full-on, you know, collections, if you will. And if you don't know, Department of Revenue has two separate programs. They act as a collection agency for other state government, and they also have a tax offset program. The tax offset program is exactly that, where they are essentially garnishing, if you will, somebody's tax return. Those are two different questions, and the way the bill is drafted today, local government across the board would be able to use both avenues at Department of Revenue. They would then be directly competing with the private sector on those types of collection cases. Sure, a lot of people would like access to, you know, tax offset. Why wouldn't you? I'm sure that, you know, a retail store down the street would also like to be able to get a tax offset when that is due. But I do think there is a difference there for local government, and it's something that I'll go back and have a conversation with my client about, you know, is a tax offset okay, and how does that work? And frankly, like I said, today is the first time I really heard that. I want to have that conversation internally before I say it's a good idea or a bad idea. I know in the past we have talked about the Department of Revenue, because it is a state agency, perhaps, you know, when there is a local government, particularly in tax offset, where a portion of that money is due to the state, it would make sense for the Department of Revenue to have some assistance in collecting that. Where it is none of that money is going to the state, is there still a connection that should be made? And I think those are the questions that you as a committee have to ask and answer yourselves. But with that, we do think that the bill as drafted is too broad. I think a better approach probably is the tax offset, but I'm a little hesitant just because I haven't had a conversation internally with my client about that to say yes or no exactly to that. But happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. If it's too broad, where would you tighten it in with what language?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have been talking with the Department of Revenue about what an amendment could look like. And certainly the way that a qualified entity is defined in the bill where it says public body, I think, you know, you can keep that same format and say a state agency. You can then specifically list the university systems and OHSU and those local governments today, like there is a one piece where counties have the ability to use Department of Revenue today. You could still use the definition of a qualified entity and specifically mention those without, you know, broadening to all local government, if you will. And I think that would clarify that Department of Revenue can still collect for some of these more semi-independent types of agencies that we have today that frankly just were structured differently 10 years ago, like OHSU, SAFE, higher ed, those kinds of things.
So if we get limited, if we used a more precise definition than public body and listed those agencies, what ones would not be included in that?
So, I think as far as state government is considered, I think everybody would be included in that scenario. I think who you're not going to then pick up are all of the different types of local governments that are out there, whether it be a water district or, you know, some counties, some cities. You know, I don't know. School districts are probably under a public body in this definition. So it is any public body is really captured, I think, in the way that we're defining it today. And I think that's the question is, do you go back to state agencies or do you go to all public bodies? And we would certainly rather it stay with state agencies than to all local governments.
Because water districts, for example, typically have collection firms that you represent.
Mr. Chair, yes, certainly I think most local governments today that are collecting on delinquent accounts, and that's not to say that everybody collects on delinquent accounts, I suppose, but most of them do contract with whether that be an in-state or an out-of-state collection agency.
Okay. Other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
That's all the signups I have for that bill, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 79. And I'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 80. Jamie McGovern will give us a briefing on that.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 80 has three main components. The first component allows the county to, there's some conforming language where the appeals process references mailing out of property tax statements where some of the counties currently use systems other than the postal mail. And so the language allows the reference for the appeals process to include process other than mailing. All of Senate Bill 80 refers to the distribution and methods of taxes and notices and delinquencies and appeals. The second large section is the gross production tax on oil and gas, and that's section 5 to 6. And that is moving from certified mail and allows the Department of Revenue to contact via regular mail. Section 7 allows the Department of Revenue to make severance tax returns to owners small tract forest land through means other than mail. And so throughout the document, otherwise delivered or other delivery is the term that's used to reference methods other than mail or certified mail.
Thank you. Questions of our economists? Mark Garst from the Department of Revenue.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Oregon Department of Revenue. This bill comes to you at the request of the governor on behalf of the Department of Revenue. This we're calling our mailing requirements cleanup bill, and so it's got some material related to a few different areas, but that is the tie that kind of brings them all together. Currently, county tax statements are allowed to be mailed or otherwise delivered, so you can email a county tax statement. We have only a couple of counties that have moved in that direction, but we have a lot of counties that are interested in it. There are other places in the statute where it makes reference to the mailing of a tax statement, but it doesn't allow for that otherwise delivered. So if it had been emailed and it hadn't been physically mailed, does that part of the statute still apply? And so we just want to go through and clean up all of that language. This is just really a cleanup bill for us. Jamie covered the areas that that are being fixed as far as that goes. And so it'll just say that where it says mailed, it'll say mailed or otherwise delivered. And technically what that's going to mean is that you would receive an email or you might receive a link where you would go and download the tax statement. Second area is the oil and gas production tax program. We recently moved this program into our GenTax software, and we have very few taxpayers for this program, but at this point we believe that all of them are filing electronically. Currently the statute requires certified mail, which is a little odd. Most of our assessment notices are delivered via first class mail, so we're cleaning that up and just saying that those statements could be mailed or, again, or otherwise delivered. So if someone wants to log into the system and get their assessment notice, that means that they've received their assessment. Last one, and also kind of along the same lines, on some of our forest land, our western and eastern Oregon small tracts forest severance program, there's currently a requirement in the statute that the Department of Revenue mail a return to a taxpayer. We're moving some of these folks into paying, into online filing, and so it wouldn't be necessary that they receive a mailed tax return. We would just like to, again, update the statutes to say that they would be able to, that those statements could be delivered by means other than mailing. And so that would basically cover if someone logged on, they have their return already in the system waiting for them, and then they could do that. We are not requiring anyone to do online filing. We know that Senator Bearsugar had a lot of concerns about that in the previous sessions, and particularly with folks in this industry. And so this is not a requirement that anyone do online filing of their returns. We'll still provide people with written returns if that's the way that they prefer to do it. But we would hope that at some point we'll get more folks opting into the online filing. So that is the concept in a nutshell. We've worked with the tax collectors, assessors, and the state bar on this concept, and there is written testimony available on OLIS. Happy to take any questions.
Questions? Senator Benz?
Is there a definition of or otherwise delivered? I mean, it's one thing to say that today's our policy is not to require electronic filing, but instead to, I'm not sure how you're managing it. That's why I'm asking about the definition.
I think it could. There is not a definition, and there are different areas where this is occurring in the statute. So if you did want to define it, you'd need to cover it in a few different places. But currently, that language is taken from the language in the tax statement, where it says that a tax statement can be mailed or delivered. So we kind of mimic that language that was already in the statute. And, you know, what I understand it to mean is it's generally you're talking about electronic means. I guess it could also mean like a courier rather than mail. But I think what we're usually talking about is electronic means, which would be you receive an email or you receive a link where you go and download something, or you log into our revenue online system and a statement is there waiting for you. Those types of otherwise delivered, yeah, I think would all be covered.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So there's a presumption, of course, the U.S. mail enjoys a presumption. If you mail it, then it's presumed delivered. What happens to that presumption in this context?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I know we have some statutes that, and you're probably more familiar with these than I am, there are some kind of broad omnibus statutes that cover electronic communication and how that's treated in relation to, you know, notices and whatnot. I am not super familiar with those. I would want to do a little bit of digging if that's a concern for you.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair, it's, I'm not sure my memory either on the blunt statement that there is such a presumption. I seem to remember it. When you're trying to prove that you did something, if you can show that you dropped it in the mail, it's deemed delivered. That's the way we call it from cases on this. I would just not want to slip away from this and then find the department in a position where you lost that presumption and didn't even know it by virtue of beginning to utilize broadly the email, the electronic means of delivering things. So anyway, it might be worth looking at.
I appreciate it. It's a good question.
Other questions? Thank you, Mark. Roger Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer here, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I apologize, I didn't get signed up on this bill in advance. In fact, I didn't even catch that this severance tax piece was on Section 7 of this bill until I just saw it on the screen. So severance tax is unlike any other property tax or these other taxes in where they are done annually. Severance tax is only done when you harvest timber. And my concern would be if you don't get a notice in the mail, someone who harvests timber once in a lifetime may not realize that they have that requirement to pay if they're required to go log on to a website someplace and find if they are required to pay a tax that they have forgotten about because it's a once in a lifetime event in most cases. So I don't know that we have specific problems with the concept of doing it other ways, but I just want to make sure that people aren't put in a position where they are not notified that they have to have a tax to pay, and then they are penalized then because they never received a notification that they have a tax to pay. That's the concern. Again, what does otherwise make available mean? Does that just mean there's a spot on a website that a taxpayer has to go find on their own in order to pay a tax that's due? We would have concern if that's what that means. If it means that they're gonna get some kind of a notice but they can file it electronically, I don't think we have a problem with that at all. We just wanna make sure that they're gonna get the notice, so.
Questions? Thank you. Thank you. I see the need here for the agency to want to streamline things, especially for taxpayers, but it does sound like there's some concern over making sure you do that in a way that just doesn't go to a kind of email. So, but that's only my first day take. We'll let this bill breathe for a while. Senator Boquist?
Yeah, I would just follow up. My presumption is, and I didn't ask Mr. Barr because I didn't want to put him on the spot, but my presumption is that when you file Oregon Department of Forestry notification, I know that they transfer year-end those notifications to the Department of Revenue, and then they, of course, send out a nice form letter that says, hey, don't forget to pay your taxes there, and here's the form. I would say that, you know, that particular technology is pretty institutionalized, but like Mr. Beyer raised, the question is now if you're going to transmit data and email links from the Department of Forestry to the Department of Revenue computer system and now generate a, I guess, a computer email form, the first thing that would jump out is that most of us have some sort of software stuff so that we don't get our, you know, systems nuked on a daily basis like happens in my office in this building. That could create some problems. So I'm just, like you, Mr. Chair, wondering if somebody might want to think through the process and the pitfalls that this goes forward with. Because I could easily see, because by the way, I have one of those notifications just for the record here. So I guess I declare conflict of interest at some point if we vote on this, because there's so few, as was pointed out by Mr. Breyer. But I don't recall for sure whether they get the email address or not. So.
Yeah, so there's probably some caution there. On the other hand, I think I do all of my banking online. I don't, you know, when I mail in the property tax statements every year, it feels like I've gone back to 1967, and I prefer all of it to be online. And I know there are a lot of people like that too. So what the happy medium is, I don't know.
Who's your internet service provider? I'd like to get them to, you know, run a line out to my house 22 miles out of town.
Other comments? All right, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 80 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 81. Jamie.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. This bill, Senate Bill 81, also comes from the governor via the Department of Revenue. The goal is to align the timber tax deadline with income tax returns, so moves it from January 31st to April 15th, specifically for property tax owners that harvest infrequently and small amounts, so that their income or their severance tax liability would be less than $1,500. It seems that in crafting this, that frequent harvesters or large harvesters that would have an expected large tax liability would still be required to make quarterly payments and complete those payments by January 31st, although the filing deadline still moves out to them, moves out for them to April 15th. That's my understanding.
Mark Arst.
Chair House, members of the committee, again, Mark Arst with the Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 81 is a what we consider to be a taxpayer-friendly initiative being brought by the Department of Revenue. Timber tax returns are currently required to be filed by January 31st for the preceding calendar year's harvest. The final payments also due on January 31st. This would include your forest harvest products tax and your Western and Eastern Oregon small tax, small tracked severance taxes. Having this January 31st deadline is a little confusing for some folks, creates some complications. The taxpayer will often be harvesting up until December 31st. They may not get notice from the mill about what their harvest summary was for another couple weeks. This may only give them a couple weeks to actually get the filing done by January 31st, so that part can be a little bit tricky. Additionally, as Mr. Beyer noted on the previous bill, many of these taxpayers may only harvest once in their lifetime. They may only harvest once every 5 to 10 years, and they simply are not thinking about paying these taxes come January 31st. So what we end up doing is assessing a lot of penalties, and we would prefer just to move the deadline out to April 15th, so that this is when these folks are probably thinking more about paying their taxes. So the deadline to file will move to April 15th. The final payment deadline will also be April 15th. That will apply primarily to folks who are doing less than $1,500 worth of taxes in a year. Other folks are quarterly filers. This would be your bigger taxpayers on the forest products harvest tax. They still will be quarterly filing, and so they'll still owe quarterly payments as of January 31st, but they'll do a reconciliation then in April, and if they got things a little bit incorrect in their estimates, they can pay it at that time. So that is the bill in a nutshell. Again, worked with assessors, Oregon Department of Forestry, the Small Woodlands Association, and private tax practitioners, including at least one CPA in Eastern Oregon who does a lot of work in this field. So that is the bill in a nutshell, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions? Thank you, sir. Roger Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Byer, here representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and we have no concerns with this bill as drafted. We, you know, believe it's fine. Unlike the last bill, this still, well, I guess, with the last bill, without the last bill, the people still get a notice of it, and we just want to make sure they're going to get the notice. But if it's not due till April 15th, we're fine with that. Happy to answer questions.
Senator Boquist.
Conflict of interest, and I want to ask him a question.
Okay.
What is the, for my personal edification here, because you heard me say before, conflict of interest, what is the Western and Eastern Oregon rate right now? Because Mr. Garst said $1,500, and then it's, you have to file quarterly. So I'm just trying to recall what the Western and Eastern Oregon severance rate per thousand is right now.
Mr. Chair.
Or is that a trick question?
It is a trick question.
Senator, he's digging rapidly behind you to see if there's some sort of, you know, uniformity between the two of you.
You're talking about the severance tax program. The harvest tax is about $4 per thousand board foot. And that also has a threshold that you have to pay quarterlies if you're over that amount. Okay. The severance tax, I honestly don't know what the rate is. I believe the rate is different Eastern Oregon versus Western Oregon. And I'm sorry, but I have no properties in the severance tax program, so I
he's going to come rescue you right
Thank
now.
Thank you.
He's just being gracious back there. So
I'll ramble until he gets here if you want me to, but...
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, so the preliminary rates that we have for the 2019 harvest for Eastern Oregon are going to be $4.65 per thousand board foot and $5.98 per thousand board foot for Western Oregon. So those are the preliminary rates that we have right now.
What was the second one?
$5.98. Since you stumped Mr. Byer.
So if just for reference point, because we're talking about electronically filing of some of this stuff, so if you divided any of these numbers, actually have a combination of two into 1,500, then you would have to be able, you would be filing quarterlies, and you're probably electronic anyway. Is that a correct assumption? Or you can bring it back and answer the question later when you come back with SBA. You see, understand my point though, right? The reason I ask the numbers is if you have the harvest number and you divide by 1,500, which is, you know, anybody above 1,500 has to file quarterlies, right? Now you're back into more electronic filing requirements. So more people would be likely. So what I was looking for is the threshold of people underneath the $1,500 filing, which then tells you how many people might miss the email in the other bill. So you can bring that back later, but you understand what I'm driving at. And if not, we're going to be down here in a minute and I can explain it to you offline.
Chair Hassler. Yeah, I appreciate that question, and we'll give that a little thought, but okay. Either group can file online currently, and they do get some notice from the, as you mentioned, from the Department of Forestry that there's a tax obligation when they file to cut those trees. So these folks, they should know, no matter what, that they have a requirement to pay these taxes, and the system that we're envisioning really on the other bill is that it would be an opt-out, where if you wanted to receive electronic notices rather than get a paper return, you could click a box and then the Department of Revenue would quit sending you paper. Maybe not in the interest of folks who deal with wood products, but that's the direction that we'd like to head. We're not gonna just one day, anytime soon, I'm not gonna make a promise for 20 years, but there's not gonna be a day anytime soon when we just quit sending out paper returns to these folks. It would be something where they opt out of receiving paper. That's what we envision.
Thank you. The Senate Revenue Committee once again proving that there's really no bill too small that we can't find issue with. So I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 81. That clears our agenda for the day. Some of us will be back here at this room at 5:30. Until then, we are adjourned.